from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, the Senate wants to raise the state's tobacco tax by a dollar, but Governor Tomlin says that could cause issues in border counties. The chamber also debates a resolution that could result in an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And more than a week after lawmakers voted to override Governor Tomlin's vetoes of the right to work measure, members of the business community are still debating its worth. We speak with two business owners tonight on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Senators voted on and approved a bill today to increase West Virginia's tobacco tax. The bill calls for a $1 increase per pack of cigarettes, putting West Virginia at $1.55 and near the national average. But the increase is more than Governor Tomlin had proposed. He says now he'll have to balance the need for revenues with the loss of business the increased tax could mean for border counties.
During his State of the State address, Governor Tomlin proposed increasing the state's cigarette tax by 45 cents per pack to a total of $1. That increase, plus additional increases to the tax rates of other tobacco products and a new tax on e-cigarettes, would bring in an additional $78 million per year to help balance the state's budget. Tomlin says when proposing the tax, he was attempting to do two things.
What I tried to do was, in addition to raising some additional revenue that we could use to backfill our public employees' insurance fund, was to make sure that our businesses in West Virginia could still be competitive.
According to the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, of the five states bordering West Virginia, only Kentucky and Virginia would have a lower cigarette tax if the legislature approved the Senate version of the bill. That bill includes a $1 increase, putting West Virginia's total cigarette tax at $1.55. Tomlin says that could cause the state to miss out on some business as West Virginians cross state lines for cheaper rates.
And what you find out sometimes, if your tax gets too high, your people start going across the border, buying their tobacco products, but while they're there, they're buying groceries, gasoline, and other things. So it does have a negative effect.
Members of the Senate, however, moved forward with their proposal Tuesday, passing the amended bill on a 26-6 vote. During a floor speech, Democratic Senator Roman Prezioso, who proposed the additional increase, said the tax hike is about more than balancing the budget. It's about reducing the number of teens that begin smoking each year. Republican Senator Tom Tacubo is a pulmonary surgeon who agreed with Prezioso. According to a Gallup poll, West Virginia has the second highest rate of smokers at nearly 30%, and Tacubo would like to see that number drop.
There's very limited things you can do. The only thing statistically, other than education, is a increase in the tobacco tax.
But Tacubo says that increase has to be significant enough to convince a person to quit, which he believes is the case with the $1 hike. The Senate-approved bill is estimated to bring in about $115 million in additional revenue each year. For the 2016 and 2017 budgets, the extra dollars will help fill budget gaps largely caused by declining severance tax incomes. But in 2018, $40 million of the money will be dedicated to a surplus account in the Public Employees Health Insurance Agency. For Democratic Senator Bob Plymouth, that connection made sense.
What this bill does is takes us a step in the right direction because, quite honestly, tobacco is a major reason why our health care costs on PEI are up. So there is a direct correlation between this and what's happening with PEIA.
The 2017 budget will be the final one Governor Tomlin proposes to state lawmakers since his term will be up in December. But for him, dedicating the funding from the tobacco tax takes away some of the flexibility built into the office of the executive.
We don't want to put more money in that fund while we're really squeezing other programs. I think it's always better to have that flexibility, to have it come into general revenue, and then let the governor present a budget and the legislature act upon that budget each year to put the money where the most need is.
Still, Tomlin says should the House approve the $1 tax increase, he, quote, probably could sign it. His main reason? Because the state is strapped for cash. Tomlin's other revenue-generating proposals, including a tax on cell phones and landlines, have not moved in either chamber. He says without those dollars, both the 2016 and 2017 budgets could be in trouble.
If they do not move the bills fairly quickly, we may run into even deeper cuts in this current fiscal year, because part of my plan was to get the bills passed, have it made effective by March 1st. That's quickly approaching here. That way the money can start coming in to backfill this year's budget as well as flow in to what I've proposed for 17.
Lawmakers have approved some measures to aid the 2016 budget year, which ends in June, including dedicating monies from the coal and natural gas severance taxes that would pay off the state's workers' compensation debt to balancing the budget. For the 2017 fiscal year, Tomlin's budget officials are predicting lawmakers will have to fill a $46 million budget hole.
The Senate bill to increase the state's tobacco tax now heads to the House of Delegates. Yesterday, we brought you testimony from a public hearing over the weekend dealing with a possible Article 5 convention of states. The resolution in the House calling for the convention seeks to amend the U.S. Constitution, requiring Congress to balance the nation's budget. In the Senate, members considered a similar resolution today, but Senate Concurrent Resolution 10 calls for more than just a balanced budget amendment. It would also have delegates at the convention work on amendments that would limit congressional terms and modify federal powers. If approved, West Virginia would be the sixth state to pass such a resolution. Here's a look at some of the debate from the Senate floor today.
But the basic point of this SCR 10 that I have a problem with, should the counties, and again, I was told by one of my colleagues, and he was accurate, that we'd have to change the state constitution. But should the counties be allowed to come up and challenge us? Right now they are. We got PEIA problems. They're challenging us on how to backfill the budget. We continue to be in a deficit as far as incoming and outgoing revenue for the last 3 or 4 years. But should all the presidents of the county commissions or municipalities be able to have a meeting and come up here and dictate to us how we do our business?
Absolutely no other business will be authorized. Well, that's not true, because the language where it says limiting the power and jurisdiction of the federal government is wide open. And as I said in committee, I'm not an English major, but I did go to school and I did go to college. And I do know that that language written as it is leaves things wide open for interpretation of those members who are selected to participate in this Article 5 convention.
I'm just not convinced that there's any Thomas Jeffersons or Alexander Hamiltons or Benjamin Franklins over in D.C. that I would trust to open up our Constitution and perhaps rip it in two.
Just while we've been debating this resolution, the federal budget has risen by $25 million just in the last few minutes. To me, that's a pretty serious situation. It continues to climb even as I'm speaking. And it was mentioned this morning that there's no way to assure that this convention can be limited, but I think to say that would be to ignore the very high bar that the Founding Fathers put in place to make sure that these debates did not get out of hand, and that high bar is the 3/4 of the states to ratify such an amendment.
If we attempt in this resolution, if we chance in this resolution one bit to destroy what could be and what is, we have done a discredit to ourselves, we've done a discredit to our great nation, but more important than that, we've done a discredit to those who were before us, those who fought in wars, those who gave their life in service, and we're doing a discredit to those who come after us.
I'm a little confused. We have people praising the founding fathers in the document that they've written, yet they're telling us not to use a portion of the document that they've written. Over the last 20 years, our national debt has doubled twice. Twice. Under administrations of both parties. So what is the hope that they're going to rein that spending in? The gentleman from Greenbrier mentions 54% wanting to go socialist. Well, the document says 75% have to ratify it. I'm not worried about that 54%. The senator from Greenbrier stood up and said, it's an insult to those that have fought wars. Sir, I've fought wars. I'm not offended by this resolution, and I'm not offended by this document.
The senator from Marshall County, I believe, said that the alternative method of modifying the Constitution or proposing amendments to the Constitution has never been used, and I don't believe that's actually true. The reason why it's not true is because it assumes the only way that second alternative can work is to actually have the convention. And what it neglects to notice is the fact that roughly half of the amendments that we have in the Constitution, counting things like the 17th Amendment, counting things like all of the Bill of Rights, are a direct response to states applying for changes to the Constitution, and Congress, before the number was properly reached to call the convention, recognizing the desire of the states and putting forth the amendments that the states were asking for. And so whether we actually have a convention out of this or not does not mean this can't be effective. We may get to 30 states, and then Congress may well put out some amendments that satisfy the concerns that are addressed in this particular resolution. In fact, I would be surprised if they don't do that. But if they don't do that, then we have to go to convention. It's the only way we're going to straighten out this federal government.
34 states would need to approve a similar resolution in order for the convention of states to be called. The Senate resolution now moves over to the House for further consideration. After a veto from Governor Tomlin last year, members of the Senate and the House have both taken up a bill that would allow West Virginians to consume raw milk. Members of the Senate passed the bill earlier this month on a vote of 22-12, and today the House took up the bill. Liz McCormick joins us to discuss what happened on the floor.
When the House took up a similar piece of legislation last year, it resulted in hours of debate on the floor. But today, members were quick to cast their final votes on Senate Bill 387. Senate Bill 387 would allow West Virginians to enter herd-sharing agreements or shared ownership of milk-producing animals. After filing the agreements with the State Department of Agriculture, it would then be legal for all of the owners to drink the raw milk produced by the animal. The herd-sharers would also be required to meet state and federal standards set by the state veterinarian and report any instances of illnesses. The bill would not allow the owners to sell or distribute the raw milk to anyone else. Delegate Kelly Sabonia, a Republican from Cabell County, stood in favor of the bill.
There's many products that remain legal in West Virginia that have presented true dangers. Tobacco is still legal, yet we keep talking about how dangerous it is. Artificial sweeteners, certain legal drugs are dangerous. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill has been discussed for several years. Let's get this out of the House, back to the Senate for a House message. Let it go to the governor. If you're against it, vote against it. But if you're for liberty and food freedom, vote for it.
Delegate Don Perdue is a Democrat from Wayne County and the former chair of the House Health Committee. He stood against the bill.
We bring this down and suggest that it's an issue of freedom. It's freedom we're talking about here. Freedom to do whatever you want. Well, folks, that means we need to get rid of all the public health laws. Smoking in buildings. We need to get rid of all of those. That's what's being said. And the troubling thing about that is your right to be sick ends where my right to be healthy begins.
House Health Committee Chair Joe Ellington spoke in support of the bill, citing other foods like raw meats, certain vegetables, and even water that could contain harmful bacteria.
So you have to put it in perspective as far as the numbers. Yes, there are potential serious infections. Yes, people can potentially die. But as I mentioned last year, most of the things we're exposed to every day can do the same thing.
Senate Bill 387 passed 88-11 and now goes to the governor for consideration.
In the governor's veto message last year, Tomlin said the bill could pose serious risk to public health, particularly in children, pregnant women, and people with compromised immune systems. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick.
Tonight we bring you the bios of three more members of the West Virginia legislature in this edition of Meet Your Lawmaker.
Bob Beach is a Democrat from Monongalia County. He was elected to represent the Senate's 13th District in 2010. Beach previously was appointed to the West Virginia House of Delegates in 1998 and was then elected to the chamber in 2000, serving until his election to the Senate. Dana Lynch was elected to the House of Delegates in 2012. A Democrat, he represents the 44th House District from Webster County. Delegate Lynch serves as the Minority Vice Chair of the House Committee on Natural Resources. He served in the U.S. Army for 28 years. Bill Hamilton represents the state's 45th House of Delegates District from Upshur County. He was elected in 2002. A Republican, Hamilton is from Upshur County and serves as the chair of the Committee on Natural Resources. The delegate spent 26 years as a Division of Natural Resources Hunter Safety Instructor, and he's only one of 15 instructors in his home county.
It's been just over a week since members of the West Virginia legislature voted to override Governor Tomlin's veto of the union-opposed right-to-work measure. But even now that the bill will become law, the business community is arguing over whether the legislation will actually improve West Virginia's economy. Rob Engel spoke with two West Virginia business owners on opposing sides of the issue, one of whom has pulled his support from the Chamber of Commerce over the measure.
Where was our vote?
This is Lowell Ferguson, the president and CEO of Nitro Electric, a business that's been around for 55 years. Ferguson was a member of the Putnam County Chamber, a local chamber of commerce, until just a few weeks ago. That's when Ferguson says he pulled his membership because of the state-level support of the right-to-work legislation.
If the chamber is going to take a position, don't you think they ought to be asking the people who are members of the chamber what your position is? They didn't ask anybody. So if we pay dues to the local chamber, and the local chamber pays dues to the state chamber and pays dues on to the national chamber, then we're in essence funding the legislation that we disagree with.
The West Virginia Workplace Freedom Act was approved by both chambers of the legislature and sent to Governor Tomlin for a signature earlier this month. Tomlin chose to veto the bill, and a majority of the members in both the House and Senate overrode that disapproval. The bill will make West Virginia a right-to-work state. That means an employee cannot be fired for refusing to join a union or refusing to pay union dues or fees. Ferguson opposes the measure and says he's not the only business owner in West Virginia to pull out of the Chamber of Commerce because of that opposition. He estimates 20 or so businesses have already done the same.
I know that some testimony was given at the Capitol that said businesses were leaving the Chamber of Commerce. That has not been what we have experienced.
Steve Roberts is the president of the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce, the state's largest business trade organization. He disputes Ferguson's claims that businesses are pulling their membership and that the organization didn't ask its members how they felt about the bill.
We are a member-driven organization. We do what our members say they believe is most important. And our members overwhelmingly tell us that they believe passing right to work will be good for employment, good for the economy, and help stimulate growth in West Virginia. So it's fine that other people want to say those things, but we're right here at the center of this, and our members overwhelmingly support the passing of right to work, and they believe it will be good for West Virginia's economy.
I'm for right to work, and what I find is when you say that, the first thing a lot of people think is, well, you're anti-union. That couldn't be anything further from the truth.
John Casey owns Casey Construction. He is one of the business owners and Chamber of Commerce members Robert spoke of.
When you're chasing the American dream, you shouldn't be forced to be a member of any organization, union or otherwise, in my opinion.
And Casey, like many lawmakers, believes a right-to-work state will draw businesses to West Virginia, creating more jobs for working West Virginians. Ferguson, on the other hand, thinks the legislation can only hurt the state's economy, making it more difficult for union shops to stay open.
The companies that try to stay here and try to be union are going to become uncompetitive. So companies like us that have been here 55 years, our choices are basically to continue the fight in the private sector until it just drowns us out, or relocate the business to another state.
Roberts and the Chamber of Commerce are standing behind the legislation and their support for it. Roberts says with the way things are going economically in West Virginia, it's time to try something new and evaluate its success.
One of our former governors said, you know, the reason the legislature comes back every year is if they don't get it right in one year, there's an opportunity to change things in the next year. We know some people are very nervous about change and very afraid of change. But the path we're on in West Virginia has not been creating jobs. It has not been helping our incomes rise and helping our West Virginia families live better. If we want to try a different course, we want to take a different path, and we think this is going to be helpful in really improving the way of life for West Virginia families.
The West Virginia Workplace Freedom Act will become law in mid-May, but it may be some time before West Virginians actually know its impacts. For the legislature today, I'm Rob Engel.
Reverend Milan Dungy has been serving the West Virginia House of Delegates for more than 11 years as a doorkeeper. In fact, he's the longest serving doorkeeper currently working at the state capitol. Tonight, we bring you a profile of Reverend Dungy and his work in the House.
My name is Milan Elijah Dungy. And my title here is I'm a doorkeeper for the House of Delegates. I used to be a chaplain for Union Mission, a men's shelter. So I did a lot of interacting with men that had been kicked out of their house or lost their job or going through family problems and life problems with themselves, you know, drinking and drugging and everything, and lost their direction. And they needed someone to help lead them in the right direction. So as a chaplain there, we ministered to them every day. You know, we gave them things that they could study to show them how to be a better person according to the Word of God. A friend of mine was telling me that they needed, you know, a doorkeeper, you know, and so I brought them a resume and they looked it over and they talked to me and interviewed me and everything, and they said I was hired. So, which was a pleasure to me because it had to give me the opportunity to talk to more people, you know, and help them out in any way I could. I do a lot of preaching. Right now I'm just an evangelist. I had a church in Montgomery, and I had that for about 4.5 years, you know, so the traveling and the older people died off and the younger people moved away, so I've now become like an evangelist, you know, so I go to different churches all over the state of West Virginia, and I preach as much as I can to whomever I can. My responsibility as a doorkeeper is to make sure those who are allowed to come in are allowed to come on the floor. And now there are people that are not allowed to come in here, and we are there to make sure that they don't come in. You know, I mean, sometimes people want to come in to pass a note to a delegate or pass a letter to a delegate during session, and that's not allowed. So we make sure that we know who's coming through that door and who's not coming through the door. Now, if they are visitors, they have plenty of room in the balconies where they can sit, you know, and observe what's going on. But as far as these doors are concerned, we are to make sure that it's secured, that no one comes in that's not supposed to be in. Even as a politician, you know, they have consciences, they have decisions that they have to make, and they want to make the right decisions, especially for the people who put them in the seats. You know, and a lot of times when they see me standing at the door, they feel that God's in the house. I try to be a spiritual uplifting to those who are in the House of Delegates. The most fun thing is meeting new delegates, you know, interacting with them, you know, watching the things that they do, how they interact with one another, you know, and I always say, you know, I know there's Republicans and Democrats, but this is the United States, so how come we can't all come together and work out the problems that the world has, you know, and it works sometimes, you know, but, you know, people have their own ideology of what things should be or how they should go about, you know. And it's interesting to hear, you know, the opinions of others, you know, how they define how a bill should be and what it's going to help or who it's going to help, you know. And it's enlightening to me to see people do things for other people.
This has been The Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for The Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at wvhtf.org.
From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.